I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thanks for rolling. We're in the book club right now. So as we talked a couple of weeks ago, Khalil Gibran's The Prophet has been in public domain for a couple of years now, and it's been very influential on our culture. You can go over to In the Cab Radio at YouTube or Spotify or Mixcloud, and you can just hear the previous podcast, the previous show that I've posted. It's all free. Just check it out. I didn't mean to say Spotify there. I meant to say just Mixcloud and YouTube. And you can catch up on the backstory, some of the research that I've already done on Khalil Gibran and this book so far and its historical and current present day impact. So I'm not going to repeat myself too much here and take up that time. There's so much information out here about him, and I suggest KhalilGibran.com is a good place to start. I have some materials here. I took notes. I forgot to print out my notes on today's portion, so I'm reading them off my laptop. So please forgive me here if I stutter a little bit. I do have citations from a couple of really good sites. One site has the whole timeline of Gibran's life and career, and it's very precise and tells about his political life. And I'm gonna stay away from digging too deep into that today. He was what I would call an activist, and he wrote a lot of commentary that was published in Arab language papers and English language papers and periodicals about what was going on in Syria and Lebanon during his lifetime. And I printed out a very moving piece that we won't get into today, but you can pretty much bet that this is going to go on sort of in the way of the Martin Luther King series went on. There's so much here that is relevant for today and our collective history. And this piece that Gibran wrote in 1923 called "You Have Your Lebanon, I Have Mine." And I would like to talk a little bit more about what is currently going on in Lebanon before I really delve into that letter. And I did not get to go down that route so before today. But it's just go out there, go to the library, go to the internet libraries, and just, wow, just take a look. It's amazing stuff. All right, so we're just gonna start with the first chapter. It's called The Coming of the Ship, and I'm gonna frame it a little bit for you. That's where my notes come in. This story, The Prophet, is about a man named Al-Mustafa. Al-Mustafa looks out in this land that he's been living in for 12 years across the sea, and he sees the ship that he's been waiting for arriving. It's time for him to want to go back home. So the first chapter, if you want to call it a chapter, some people call it a poem. The first bit of poetic prose, point one in the table of contents of The Prophet, we meet Mustafa and we meet the people of Orphalese, the town where he is living and leaving. And we begin to learn about Gibran's style of writing. I don't want to get too literati on the whole thing, but I do want to just contextualize what this means to me. And many people have discovered Gibran, whether early or late in life, the way that he used words to paint pictures, it's chef's kiss. So we get introduced to Gibran's style. We get introduced to Al-Mustafa and the people that he meets. Also, I'm going to tell you a bit of what he believed in. He was born in Lebanon, I guess late 1800s. He was brought up Maronite Christian, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, you know, has to do with, you know, a certain saint and this and that. But he was really brought up a certain Christian, Maronite. However, Lebanon was dominantly Islamic. So he was also influenced by the culture around him, Islamic culture, and the mysticism of the Sufis, the mystical part of Islam. I don't know a whole lot about all of that, but I find it fascinating. And I love that there's a mystical arm of just about every organized religion that we look at right now, the three dominant religions, so to speak. And then later on in life, Gibran began to study Carl Jung and Jungian's philosophies and approach to psychology, dreams, and our deep psyche and things like this. Also, theosophy, which I learned it's a very specific way to communicate with spirit or God or whatever you want to call that. I just basically scratched the surface here on what that word means. And it's a religious and philosophical system established in the late 19th century, founded by a Russian mystic and spiritualist. There's Gnosticism and Indian religions of Hinduism and Buddhism. I'm really into just the idea that we all have our own hotline to divinity. And I love all these different types of philosophies and religion. I just wish that we didn't have to stab each other and blow each other up over it. So anyway, so when we're looking at the prophet, we are reading and listening to the words of someone who has a deep philosophical understanding and thirst to learn more. The name Al-Mustafa, it's Arabic, and it means the chosen, appointed, or preferred one. And the Prophet Muhammad is called Al-Mustafa. Allah chose Muhammad to deliver the final message to the people. And we look at analogies of Gibran's coming of the ship. And what I've dug up on this, the ship is the soul, right? And we're navigating this vast ocean of life. Turmoil, the unknown depths of consciousness, that gets into the Jungian thing. Squalls appear out of nowhere and you're adrift. And in Christianity, the ship is used, something about Jesus and the mast and being symbolic of the cross. And Jesus was a sailor and a fisherman and did a lot of his teachings on or near the water and conducted miracles on the water. He also reappeared, you know, after his death, coming across the waters. And so, you know, there's a deep symbolism of the coming of the ship. As we get into just the first few sentences of this, Al-Mustafa's ship comes with the mist. Mist symbolizes obscurity, that which is unseen. The mists of clouded thought in some folklore. The mist is the veil that behind which is another dimension. The land of Fae or any number of dream worlds. So we put these things into context. Faith, wisdom, the message. Al-Mustafa is described as a dawn unto his day, bringing wisdom to the people in his own lifetime. And his ship is approaching in the 12th year on the 7th day of a month called Elul. And I'm just breaking apart this first sentence because this is probably the most obscure sentences in the passage. So we're going to get through this and then we're going to go right to the land of Orphalis in our minds. But I want us to know where we're going and what is there. So I picked apart some of this because I was like, what is the meaning of this? This made it into the book over 101 years, we're reading this unchanged. What are we saying specifically with the 12th year on the seventh day? And taking into context Gibran's philosophical leanings, the number 12 has so many different connotations. There's the 12 tribes of Israel. Allah created 12 lunar months. And of these, month 11, 12, 1, and 7 are sacred. There are the 12 imams that are the lineage of Muhammad himself's teachings. And all of the other places where we can find the number 12 in Christianity, the disciples. And then the seventh day, the Sabbath. And I went into this because, you know, Christian upbringing and the oversimplification of things is like the seventh day he rested. He created everything in the six days, and then on the seventh day he rested. And I was like, okay, but I don't know anything about Islam or Sufism. And I'm reading the words, the very beautiful words of someone who is immersed of that culture. So what does the seventh day mean in Islam? And this specific person that whose website I visited stressed the fact that God didn't need rest. And I thought, wow, I never thought about that. I think people make everybody tired. And then God tired. But no, that's the whole point of being God, is that you always on call, you always on time, right? That's what they believe. So God's not getting tired, but it is still considered a Sabbath in the sense that across religions, we're meant to give thanks, to really give thanks. And it continues to say that in Islam, they pray several times a day, take a moment off work and you pray. So there's no specific day off for prayer, and that this is a like kind of a construct to make sure that people do get to rest. But thinking about this, that in the Quran, verse 32:4, I'm not sure how they say, but Allah is said to have created in 6 days, and on day seven, quote, established himself above the throne. And I thought that makes some sense, you know, like in the Bible, Christian Bibles, it's kind of like you make something and then you stand back and you marvel in it. You give yourself, it is done, and now it shall fulfill its purpose. And you establish yourself as a manager of the thing you created. So the coming of the ship, we have Al-Mustafa, the chosen one, a messenger standing outside on a very holy day. That's where we enter The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, copyright 1923. Published by Alfred A. Knopf, The Coming of the Ship. Al-Mustafa, the chosen and the beloved, who was a dawn unto his own day, had waited 12 years in the city of Orphalese for his ship that was to return and bear him back to the isle of his birth. And in the 12th year, on the seventh day of Elul, the month of reaping, he climbed the hill without the city walls and looked seaward, and he beheld his ship coming with the mist. Then the gates of his heart were flung open, and his joy flew far over the sea, and he closed his eyes and prayed in the silences of his soul. But as he descended the hill, a sadness came upon him, and he thought in his heart, "How shall I go in peace and without sorrow? Nay, not without a wound in the spirit shall I leave this city. Long were the days of pain I have spent within its walls, and long were the nights of aloneness. And who can depart from his pain and his aloneness without regret? Too many fragments of the spirit have I scattered in these streets, and too many are the children of my longing that walk naked among these hills, and I cannot withdraw from them without a burden and an ache. It is not a garment I cast off this day, but a skin that I tear with my own hands. Nor is it a thought I leave behind me, but a heart made sweet with hunger and with thirst. Yet I cannot tarry longer. The sea that calls all things unto her calls me, and I must embark. For to stay, though the hours burn in the night, is to freeze and crystallize and be bound in a mold. Fain would I take with me all that is here, but how shall I? A voice cannot carry the tongue, and the lips that give it wings, alone it must seek the ether. And alone without his nest shall the eagle fly across the sun. Now when he reached the foot of the hill, he turned again toward the sea, and he saw his ship approaching the harbor, and upon her prow the mariners, the men of his own land. And his soul cried out to them, and he said, Sons of my ancient mother, you riders of the tides, how often have you sailed in my dreams, and now you come in my awakening, which is my deeper dream. Ready am I to go, and my eagerness with sails full set awaits the wind. Only another breath will I breathe in this still air, only another loving look cast backward, and then I shall stand among you, a seafarer among seafarers. And you, vast sea, sleepless mother, who alone are peace and freedom to the river and the stream, only another winding will this stream make, only another murmur in this glade, and then shall I come to you, a boundless drop to a boundless ocean. And as he walked, he saw from afar men and women leaving their fields and their vineyards and hastening towards the city gates. And he heard their voices calling his name and shouting from field to field, telling one another of the coming of his ship. And he said to himself, Shall the day of parting be the day of gathering? And shall it be said that my eve was in truth my dawn? And what shall I give unto him who has left his plow in mid-furrow, or to him who has stopped the wheel of his winepress? Shall my heart become a tree heavy laden with fruit, that I may gather and give unto them? And shall my desires flow like a fountain, that I may fill their cups? Am I a harp, that the hand of the mighty may touch me, or a flute, that his breath may pass through me? A seeker of silences am I, and what treasure have I found in silences that I may dispense with confidence? If this is my day of harvest, in what fields have I sowed the seed, and in what unremembered seasons? If this is indeed the hour in which I lift up my lantern, it is not my flame that shall burn therein. Empty and dark shall I raise my lantern, and the guardian of the night shall fill it with oil, and he shall light it also. These things he said in words, but much in his heart remained unsaid, for he himself could not speak his deeper secret. And when he entered into the city, all the people came to meet him, and they were crying out to him as with one voice. And the elders of the city stood forth and said, Go not yet away from us. A noontide have you been in our twilight, and your youth has given us dreams to dream. No stranger are you among us, nor a guest, but our son and our dearly beloved. Suffer not yet our eyes to hunger for your face. And the priestesses said unto him, Let not the waves of the sea separate us now, and the years you have spent in our midst become a memory. You have walked among us a spirit, and your shadow has been a light upon our faces. Much have we loved you, but speechless was our love, and with veils has it been veiled. Yet now it cries aloud unto you, and would stand revealed before you. And ever has it been that love knows not its own depth until the hour of separation. And others came also and entreated him, but he answered them not. He only bent his head, and those who stood near saw his tears falling upon his breast. And he and the people proceeded toward the great square before the temple. And there came out of the sanctuary a woman whose name was Almitra, and she was a seeress. And he looked upon her with exceeding tenderness, for it was she who had first sought and believed in him when he had been but a day in their city. And she hailed him, saying, Prophet of God, in quest of the uttermost, long have you searched the distances for your ship, and now your ship has come, and you must needs go. Deep is your longing for the land of your memories and the dwelling place of your greater desires, and our love would not bind you, nor our needs hold you. Yet this we ask ere you leave us, that you speak to us and give us your truth, and we will give it unto our children, and they unto their children, and it shall not perish. In your aloneness you have watched with our days, and in your wakefulness you have listened to the weeping and the laughter of our sleep. Now, therefore, disclose to us ourselves, and tell us all that has been shown you of that which is between birth and death. And he answered, People of Orphalese, of what can I speak, save of that which is even now moving within your souls? That's the first chapter of The Prophet, by Khalil Gibran, The Coming of the Ship. How about that beautiful artistic language, huh? So I was listening to this song, The Ship in Port. It was perfect. It helped me get back to the point of what this book, this first chapter, is about. It's about an immigrant. It's about a nomad. It's about people of a land who are very attached to their land and how they deal with a nomad immigrant, right? When we were talking about this book a couple of weeks ago, I did the brief introduction. I believe it was the third week of September. I just posted it on the social media pages, In the Cab Radio, YouTube, and Mixcloud. You can find it there for free. And, you know, as we got on that point of Gibran was immigrated to the United States with his mom when he was 12 from Lebanon. And we will get into in this series what the things that Lebanon as a country and the people of that country have been through from World War I forward and backward. I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but it's a lot, right? So that's who we're dealing with, and the people who are of this land, as he's saying, what do I tell them who put down their plowshares? What do I tell those who walked away from, you know, stopped the wheel of his wine press? you know, these folks are out there working, living their day, and they hear that this person whom they've accepted as one of their own, you know, you are no longer, you're no stranger to us, nor a guest, but our son and our dearly beloved. And they come out to find him before he leaves to gather his wisdom, because they're attached to the land. They're there. It's not implied that they've traveled. And the song, The Ship in Port, the lyrics are just right on point. Some say our dreams are a distant road down which our hearts would like to go, but I have always stayed in place under that old illusion that it's safe. As we in our culture right now deal with the topic of immigration, how we treat people who are not from here, we should treat them as bringers of treasures. Places that we haven't been or don't dare go for several, you know, all kinds of reasons. They bring it to us. They bring their food. They bring their philosophy, the ideas, culture, art, an outlook, story, just ways to pass time. And instead of shunning folks and making them fight so hard, we should be kinder as a nation. I saw this thing on the Metas last night. I think it was, you know, Instagram or whatever. It was a woman in where they are right now, excuse me, Minnesota, maybe Missouri, wherever they're giving the Haitian people a hard time when Trump went over there and said they were eating pets. And there's this person at a town hall, and it's just a live recording of her, a community member at the microphone speaking. And the caption on it is sarcasm 101 or something like that. And this white woman gets up and she's talking about how she can't believe that, you know, these immigrants are coming here and opening restaurants and buying dilapidated houses in their town and paying property taxes on otherwise vacant buildings. And so if they get $292 in SNAP benefits or a cash card for $300 and something, we all know that $600 a month will have you living like a millionaire in our town while they wait for their visa or, you know, whatever paperwork they're waiting on. And this woman was very, it's a satire, but, you know, she was really being the mirror for her counterparts in the audience and amplifying in a humorous way the absurdity that people who are coming here, whatever she said legally, I'm not going to go down that road. However, these folks are paying taxes and doing things to make communities better. I thought about how she was building up the benefits, I don't want to even use words like diversity, but for real, I'm like, what kind of restaurants? What they cooking? Right? No, y'all tired of whatever you've been eating here for the past 100 years? Go eat some Haitian food, you know? So there is that. The prophet as a commentary on immigration, on how to treat the stranger at our door. And it was very interesting because the people said, you know, we've been quiet. Speechless was our love, and with veils has it been veiled. Yet now it cries aloud unto you and would stand revealed before you. They're like, we didn't appreciate you while you were here, and we're so sorry now you're leaving. And this is a line that I know that we've all heard before in some way, shape, or form. Love knows not its own depth until the hour of separation. That sound familiar to you? Don't know what you got till it's gone. You don't miss the water till the well run dry. All of that. Love knows not its own depth until the hour of separation. Next time you put a resignation in at a job and they're like, oh, please don't go, we'll do this. You just say, love knows not its own depth till the hour of separation. That's my breakup line for everybody. You put that one in your hat. What else did I want to cover? We're running a little bit low on time. Oh, Almitra, the seeress. So she comes out of the temple, and the prophet, very importantly, he proceeds to the great square before the temple. They don't all go in the temple. That's something to think about. The things that I really appreciate about Gibran's philosophy, when I bring it back to the beginning, of spirituality being in us and in everywhere. And as we break, as we go into all of the poems and all of the chapters on the aspects of life and the human condition, it will become very clear for those of you who aren't familiar that everything that we want to understand, we already know within us. What is shelter? What is wisdom? What is love? What is relationship? And I love that it's very clear that we're having this conversation at the seaside, at the great square, and before the temple, not inside of it. And that the person who first accepted him in the town was a woman, and she was a seer. And that's a great station. Now they have here, you'll see the priests and the priestesses come out, the elders come out, but Almitra is given her own specific definition of being a diplomat. She could foretell, she could see, she had wisdom, to me implied before others. And that's something to be noted. When the stranger, this prophet, this sage, what did she call him? Prophet of God in quest of the uttermost. In quest of the uttermost. She says, in your aloneness, you have watched with our days. And in your wakefulness, you have listened to the weeping and the laughter of our sleep. Once upon a time, I imagined that he's on a hill or in his hermit shack and people are literally asleep. And today, and recently, as we use words like woke, y'all know I love to bring up woke. I do. Because it's ridiculous to me that anybody's mad at people waking up. It's just ridiculous. So I look at this line and he's there woke. In his wakefulness. He's woke. And he's standing there listening to the weeping and the laughter of their sleep. And there are people here right now listening to my voice who know what I'm talking about. Whether you're awake or, and you, I don't think we're fully awake in this meat suit, you know, it's a condition to be in a meat suit. It's a process to continue to be awakened. Because as long as we're on this earth, there's stuff to know and learn. And conquer within our egos and all of these other things. However, that's about Al-Mustafa. That's where we bring it back to Allah, Muhammad, and you know, the true, like, the garments that he's put on Al-Mustafa as a representation of wisdom and a holy word. And, you know, Almitra is owning it for everyone. Tell us about ourselves. Before you go, please help us out. Help us out. And the people wanted to know. Because in the future chapters, we get to them. Now, you know, they come up and start asking. So we'll see how the people approach with their questions. And I'm so sad that the rest of the books didn't get written. We covered a couple of weeks ago that Gibran had intended a trilogy. And the last book, only one line was written in his conceptualization. And that's that he returns to Orphalese and he's stoned. And he called each stone a holy name. Because at the end of the day, do people really want to know the truth about themselves? They may ask. We tell them. I get told. It's painful. It's confusing. Shatters your conception of yourself. And then we say, well, what other people don't think don't matter. But then the community is fractured. So that's why we have wisdoms like the prophet to help us in processing these thoughts and feelings so that we don't fracture. Almitra asked, please tell us so that we can pass this on to our children, and they pass it to their children, and they pass it to their children. And now here we are 101 years later, almost to the day we opened this up last month in the 101st anniversary of the initial publication of this book, which took 11 years for him to write. So it's a great gift, and I think it's still valid. I guess I didn't finish making the point about the immigrants in Guantanamo Bay. That's where I was trying to go. And the show we did a couple of weeks ago, I was going through the people that from all walks of life that request this book. And it was mentioned in this article. Many people might not remember, if you're younger, the actual footage that came out of Guantanamo Bay after 9/11. When people were captured and tortured and tapes were leaked out about the horrible things that United States military guards, the atrocities they were committing upon prisoners there. Beatings, rapes, murders. It was just really bad. And they took pictures of it on their flip phones and sent it around. And that to me is like reminiscent of the lynchings. They used to lynch people in the American South and then take pictures, and they were actually make postcards out of it and mail them around. And it was just totally cool to do that. So as we relate that prisoners in Guantanamo Bay requested this book to give them comfort, that says something to me. And all of those people are Arab, right? So how they are treated, how we treat each other, there's chapters in here about crime, about law, about justice. But the first one is love. And we're going to cover that next week. At In The Cab Radio on Instagram. You can shoot me a DM, inthecabradio@gmail. Shoot me a note. If you want to talk about it, you want to discuss it, you want to be a guest on the show, I don't know. Hit me up. Thanks for hanging in with me, y'all. Appreciate you, as always.